Hey, the meeting of the Washington County Planning Commission will come to order at 6:30. My name is Jeff Petrillo. I am serving as acting chair because Chair Vile is out of town, or as he said, he was unavailable to come tonight. And so, other than that, let's take a quick roll call here. I will note for the record who is in attendance. Myself, Commissioner Mills, Commissioner Lockwood, Commissioner Enloe is participating via phone. Commissioner Wellner, Commissioner Erstat are present. Absent are Commissioner Bartholomew, Commissioner Vile, and Commissioner Beatty. So with that, the first order of business, I guess, would be, or the next order of business would be the director's report. Mr. Back.
Thank you. We're winding down the ordinance season, as you all know. So today we'll have the hearing on the accessory dwelling units ordinance, number 859. And then on September 4th, we have the Tektronix Development Agreement extension before you. And that'll be our final land use ordinance of the season. Once it's over, we anticipate a meeting per month to do sort of work session-like topics. We heard and have heard sort of through the course of the year about things that you may be interested in, and feel free if things pop in your mind in the next 7 minutes to share those with us. But next meeting, we are prepared to kind of go over our list officially and sort of have a semi-proposal. But I think it'll be a little bit fluid just because things can change. So
you said once a month you're hoping to do that?
I think that makes sense. Yeah. But again, it's a function of your eagerness to show up and devote time. So we can talk more about that.
Yeah, and I think it'd be good to have the chair weigh in too, and like what he'd like to see. So hopefully he'll be here at the next meeting and can weigh in on that.
Okay, great.
Just to the commissioners who are present, please email Mr. Back, or you can just put on the record if anything that you might think of wanting to be addressed by staff or other, for the benefit of edification of the other commissioners.
Right. A little administrative information just over the next couple of weeks. So Susan has a long-deserved vacation plan, and Todd Borkowitz, your liaison, is out for a little bit. So some of you may remember Tracy Shirley, who worked in Susan's position for a while. So she'll be stepping in over the next couple of weeks. So if you have administrative things you need to take care of, she's the person to talk to. But you can always call Teresa or I if you need to.
Along the scheduling line, if you're thinking of once a month, I mean, should we consider canceling September 19th then?
I think we can officially take that action on the 4th.
The 5th, isn't it?
What's that?
The first meeting of the month? Oh, it's the 4th. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong calendar.
I think you can have that in the back of your minds, but
it's not too late to cancel at that time.
Right.
Okay.
Question. Would email to Susan be routed to Tracy then? Or how does that work while Susan's gone? Or if we still have the type of question that we would
automatically
send to Susan.
Okay. So if you get get a response from her that says she's out of office.
Okay.
So if you get that, then I would just automatically forward it on to either Tracy or Teresa or myself if I was in your position. And I assume she'll have on her out of office Tracy's email, so it'll be one-stop shopping hopefully for you. let's see. The board, just to let you know, they've...
Please, yeah. Always interested in what happens.
Changed a few things around on their meetings in September because they're going to be out in town, out of town and such. So that there's going to be an evening meeting on the 17th of September, and then their meeting that was going to be scheduled on the 24th is canceled. So last week, so 8 days ago, they adopted the transportation system plan ordinance that came to you a couple months ago. And then yesterday, they engrossed the plan development ordinance, including a lot of the changes that you recommended, but not all of them. The one area that they were a little bit hesitant on was the natural resources issue, and having plan developments have a high percentage of those, that area count towards them. And I think their hesitancy was, we do have this natural resource sort of issue paper coming out that's going to look at that issue more holistically. And my sense is they wanted to look at that and then sort of consider plan developments specifically for natural or significant natural areas, just looking at it specifically. I think that's really all I have. Anything else?
What about telecommunications? Where does that stand? Or was that postponed, correct?
It was continued. It comes back on the...
September 17th.
Okay, right. That's right.
And we do anticipate having more information from the right-of-way permitting side that we can share, that we will share with the board, and as that's available, we will certainly bring that to you for your information.
Great. Any questions for Mr. Beck?
I have one question.
Go right ahead.
On the significant natural resource work you guys are doing, I know that the community plan maps identify specific SNRs, but they're very... It's like somebody just kind of took an aerial photo and drew some colors with a crayon 25 years ago. In your mind today, are the PUD allowances you're thinking about going to accommodate more than just those areas on the community plan map? Or if you buy a piece of property and it's got a stream corridor, because I've seen a number of properties with stream corridors, riparian areas adjacent that weren't actual SNRs, on your guys' community plan maps, are those going to fall into the categories that could be protected or utilize the PUD process? And that's, again, I know you haven't done the white paper yet.
I'll let Teresa, she's thought more about this than me, and I'll agree with her, hopefully.
I mean, we're definitely open to that idea, and I would like to hear more maybe about what those kind of areas are that wouldn't already be mapped that might be. But we haven't fully fleshed out that idea yet, so it's a concept at this point. And so details, if you have any specifics you'd like us to look into, let us know and we'll look into that.
I've seen places where an SNR's map, but there's no creek there, and we were able to correct. I guess usually able to correct that, but it's quite a costly process to go through.
Yeah,
because it looked like this. Somebody had just taken every stream that was on a USGS map, I think, and made those automatically SNRs. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, I think some of the old mapping, obviously since like LIDAR wasn't available then, it it was done pretty inaccurately based on aerial photos and topography that we had at the time. And so in a lot of cases, it's maybe not located where it's identified, or it's a different shape, or it's, it may not actually be the resource. If it, one of the ideas we have is that it could be area that enhances the natural resource area. So if there is an area that doesn't end up being a significant natural resource, but protecting it could enhance the value of other protected resources, that's something we probably would be able to consider. So again, I think we'll be developing that, but it's good to think about that as we develop it.
Anything else?
I have a comment. I don't know what the other commissioners feel about this, but I would prefer to have the meetings in the evening if we're just going to have them once a month. I know that staff feels that we have to have, in theory, a evening meeting and a day meeting. I would propose that, and I don't care if we meet the first or the third Wednesday of the month, but if people don't mind having it at 6:30, if we want to meet the first Thursday, I propose that for those months, we reverse them, have the first meeting at 6:30, and then the second meeting, which then becomes canceled at 1:30. But that's just my thoughts. I don't know what other people.
Well, I'll let anyone else comment. I would prefer to wait to have the chair present to make that.
I'm just bringing it up.
No.
Think about it, and certainly I think.
And you know, based on his schedule, if he is able to come, it's usually
the evening. It's the day meeting that he's primarily conflicted with, so that would probably work for him as well, as well as other people who have daytime commitments. It might be more convenient.
I'm not asking
for any action at this point, but I'm just bringing it up so we can think, staff can think about it.
It's appropriate.
And we can talk about it next time or whatever.
Right. So. I assume staff checks in with the chair periodically, and particularly on scheduling of meetings or topics. They can address that with him, because the next meeting is a day meeting, and I don't know if he is anticipating being here or not.
And I'm not proposing changing that.
Right.
I'm just talking about
I didn't think you were.
That, yeah.
Right. Anything else? Thank you, staff. The next order of business would be the oral communications part of the agenda for members of the public who may be interested in addressing something that's not necessarily on the agenda already. And there's nobody signed up as far as I'm aware, and there is no one visually present. So we're gonna skip over any oral communications or waive that or move on. And the next would be the consideration of ordinance 859, which will consist of a public hearing, but will first be entertained with a staff report. Who is providing that?
I'm Brian Robb, Associate Planner in Community Planning.
Ms. Kelly, are you participating as well?
If needed, I am.
If needed, okay. Well, let's proceed.
Thanks, Commissioners. As I said, I'm Brian Robb, Associate Planner with Community Planning. Just to briefly go over the order of the presentation, we're going to give a ordinance summary to start, a brief definition of what an accessory dwelling unit is, some of the community benefits or potential community benefits of ADUs, some of the recent state requirements and recommendations that have come out over the last couple of years surrounding ADUs, and then we'll finally get into the proposed 2019 amendments to the accessory dwelling unit standards. Finally, we'll end with the staff recommendation. So just really big picture, the ordinance proposes to change many of the county's accessory dwelling unit standards, and the intent is really to comply with state requirements and address state and regional recommendations to further reduce barriers to accessory dwelling unit development in the county overall. So a lot of you are probably familiar with what an ADU is, especially having read the staff report, but what DLCD defines as an accessory dwelling unit is an interior, attached, or detached residential structure that is used in connection with or that is accessory to a single-family dwelling. And on the top of this slide, you just see the various types of ADUs that that homeowners can build. On the first slide is just showing in the blue areas, an attic or a basement could be converted to an accessory dwelling unit. An attached could be an attached unit on the back of a primary dwelling, or an ADU could be a completely detached accessory dwelling.
Wait, Mr. Sharrock, could you go back?
Sure.
It's a bit of a semantical issue, but why is it being referenced as an interior when in fact are they saying the interior applies to both an attached and detached?
No, I think it's like converting an attic into a separate unit.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I got it. I'm sorry. So it's a sequence, which is interior, attached or detached, or that is accessory. It sounds like a lawyer drafted it. So, okay. It's not extremely clear.
Right. And as we move forward, for all intents and purposes, the ordinance before you today or the proposed ordinance changes refer to an internal or an attached interchangeably because they are.
Yeah, I think the issue is there's an and before interior, and then there's not a article before the next sequence. It just threw me off grammatically.
I see what you're saying.
I'm sorry. I'm not an English major. It's just something that go right ahead. So.
Okay, thanks.
And it's not you. It's obviously the DLCD.
So. Sure. Some of the community benefits or potential community benefits of accessory dwelling units is that really they can reduce costs for both homeowners and renters. They can decrease housing costs for renters by increasing supply, but they can also help homeowners afford their homes a little more easily. If they have an ADU, they can rent to provide that additional income. ADUs also increase housing variety in existing neighborhoods to accommodate a wider range of preferences and income levels. So it might open up a neighborhood that might not otherwise be accessible to the ADU renter, given maybe it's a smaller family size and maybe all the homes in that area are larger and they wouldn't be able to afford to live there. ADUs also enable seniors and adult children to live independently near their family members. ADUs also particularly optimize the use of existing land and infrastructure. So more units on a block, you use less water, feet of water line or sewer line than had they not been there. As you'll remember from last year, 2 years ago, actually, the state had adopted Senate Bill 1051, which required the county to make several changes to the accessory dwelling unit standards. That bill identified all housing as needed housing, and as such, it required clear and objective standards to apply to accessory dwelling units as well. It required at least one ADU to be allowed per detached single-family dwelling, and it also clarified that any siting and design regulations must be reasonable, and the board addressed these requirements last year with Ordinance 835 that removed some subjective design standards and also added accessory dwelling units to several land use districts that they weren't allowed in previously. Right, not any zone. It's any zone that allows a detached single-family dwelling.
Any zone where there's a detached dwelling?
any single-family zone. Yeah, it's pretty, liberally applied.
So in 2018, DLCD recommended further changes across the board, which included allowing two ADUs per single-family dwelling, and suggested that maybe the best way to go about that would be to allow one internal to the primary dwelling and one detached from the primary dwelling. Another DLCD recommendation was to allow internal ADUs to occupy an entire floor of the primary dwelling. There's certain issues that arise when a floor is less than the allowable square footage and sections of that floor might need to be walled off from the ADU for that to be compliant with the standard. Another recommendation from DLCD was to remove off-street parking requirements for accessory dwelling units. So most recently, House Bill 2001 was just signed by the governor a couple weeks ago, and this was happening, or at least this bill was being developed as we were working on a new proposed accessory dwelling unit development standard. So it was just a good timing to include some of this in some of the work we were doing. But House Bill 2001 further defined what constitutes a reasonable local regulation to siting and design. And it determined that the following were not reasonable: owner occupancy requirements and off-street parking. So it is now unenforceable to require parking or owner occupancy of accessory dwelling units or the primary residence when it comes to owner occupancy. So getting into the proposed amendments to the current ordinance, the first thing that we started with was just general clarification of the language in both the accessory dwelling unit section 430-117 and really pulling out some of the things that weren't really standards and moving them up to the definitions section. Then we went ahead and went back and looked at SB 1051 and made additional changes that SB 1051 required, particularly that we had missed that ADUs should have been allowed at, or set to be as allowed in FD 10 and FD 20, because it wasn't immediately intuitive that those zones with interim residential uses should have been allowed to have accessory dwelling units as well. So that's one of the proposed changes. Moving into this year's new rules with regard to HB 2001, as you'll see in the packet, we're proposing removing both owner occupancy requirements as well as off-street parking requirements for accessory dwelling units. Additional changes consistent with the aforementioned DLCD recommendations are that we're proposing allowing two accessory dwelling units, one internal to the primary dwelling and one detached from the primary dwelling. We're also recommending allowing an attached or internal ADU to occupy an entire floor regardless of the floor area. So we're changing the, we're proposing changing the limit on internal ADUs of 50% of the primary dwelling area to 800 square feet, except in the situation where a floor is greater than 800 square feet, then it can be converted into an ADU regardless of that square footage. Additional proposed changes include changing the type of review for accessory dwelling units in the R6 North Bethany district from a type 1 to a type, or from a type 2 to a type 1. It's the only remaining district that's not a transit-oriented district that has a type 2 review. And we staff believes that the only reason that that is the case is because it was missed. There had been a number of accessory dwelling unit code amendments over the last several years, and all, from everything that we can read and understand from previous staff reports, was that they meant to mimic the same level of review from the non-North Bethany districts in the North Bethany districts. We're also proposing allowing occupancy of the accessory dwelling unit prior to the primary dwelling. In a recent code audit by Metro, they identified allowing occupancy of an ADU prior to the primary dwelling as supportive practice. And it seems as though that, recently we received testimony from the Home Builders Association that said this would be supportive practice to maybe get more accessory dwelling units built up front in a, from a developer's perspective, as opposed to just everyday homeowners building accessory dwelling units. And what that would allow is for the accessory dwelling unit, which may take less time to build, the potential owner could move into the accessory dwelling unit prior to the primary dwelling unit being built. Furthermore, we're proposing allowing home occupations to be allowed at the same level as by the underlying district. One of the reasons for that is that by not allowing home occupations, that's just reducing the ability for homeowners to maintain an income source or diversify their income sources.
Could you explain, could you go back?
Yeah.
What do you mean exactly by home occupations?
Home occupations would be to have to be employed.
Like a, have a business in a home?
Right.
Okay, I just wanted, that's what I thought, I just wanted.
It's kind of confusing with allowing occupancy of an ADU right above allowing home occupation. Okay. I apologize for the order of that. So, any other questions, sir?
Occupations that would be allowed in the primary dwelling too, right? That's not, you wouldn't have further allowances.
Correct. Other proposed amendments would be to really clarify the front setback language for accessory dwelling units. Previously, it was really confusing for both staff and applicants. I think it read something to the effect of the ADU must be located behind or at least 20 feet behind the front facade of the primary dwelling. So it just, it was difficult to understand for starters. But what we're also proposing based on recommendations from our current planning staff is that we allow for corner lots or homes on corner lots, either road, the front or the street-facing side, to act as the front setback for the primary dwelling. So there's certain instances where there might be an accessory structure that a homeowner wanted to convert into an accessory dwelling unit, but maybe the ADU was too close to the road, but and then in that case, it wasn't allowed to be converted into an accessory dwelling unit. So really, we're just trying to provide more flexibility for those folks who would like to pursue building an accessory dwelling unit on a corner lot. Also, we're proposing revising the accessibility standards that allow additional square footage for ADUs. Currently, accessory dwelling units, detached accessory dwelling units can be up to 800 square feet, but the current allowance states that you can get a 15% increase in square footage if you build it to ADA standards. Well, what staff found is that ADA standards aren't really the appropriate standard for residential dwellings. They're really meant for commercial buildings and things of that nature that are funded with federal funds. So even HUD doesn't use ADA standards for accessibility requirements. They use another standard developed by the same agency, the American Access Board, and it's called the Universal Federal Accessibility Standards. So we're proposing adopting their dwelling unit standards to encourage the development of more accessible units through allowing that additional square footage. Also, we're proposing clarifying ADUs as being distinct and exempt from the section directly before it, accessory uses and structures, which is regulated in CDC section 430-1. So there, an accessory use and structure or structure is defined differently than an accessory dwelling unit. And there's setback standards and square footage caps and things of that nature that apply to accessory uses and structures that don't apply to accessory dwelling units in the same way. So we just created a line in the beginning of the accessory dwelling unit standards explicitly stating that the prior standards for accessory uses and structures don't apply to ADUs. So in essence, what this allows folks to do is to meet both the accessory uses and structures, square footage maximums and setbacks and such, and not have that count against them for the accessory dwelling unit. Another proposal in the, or another amendment in the proposal is to regulate the maximum height of an ADU based on the height of the primary dwelling rather than a number of stories. Currently, the standard only allows a one-story detached ADU, and it also restricts the development of an ADU above a garage if the primary dwelling is only one story. Staff felt that the impacts would be minimum if the height was restricted to the height of the primary dwelling rather than based on the number of stories. So they would be a similar scale as the primary dwelling. Other proposed amendments are to allow the entrance of the accessory dwelling unit to face the front property line. In a lot of situations, it would likely be imperceptible from the front property line, particularly with a detached ADU in the backyard, that you would even be able to see that the accessory dwelling unit's front door was facing the front property line. So that was one of the reasons behind that proposal. Also, we're proposing removing minimum rear and side yard area requirements and allowing the related district standards to suffice for open area requirements. So many of the districts already have open area requirements. I believe R9, for instance, has 450 square feet exclusive of driveways and open yard area requirements. If a homeowner were to propose an accessory dwelling unit, they would have to meet not only setbacks, but the minimum yard area requirements of the underlying district and the additional yard area requirements in the accessory dwelling unit standards. And by proposing to remove this, it would provide homeowners more flexibility in siting and design of accessory dwelling units, and even allow accessory dwelling units in some situations that they might not be able to even fit one on the property. That concludes the staff report and presentation. The staff recommendation is to conduct the public hearing and to recommend approval of the ordinance 859 to the Board of Commissioners. With that, I can answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Rupp?
Are there SDCs associated with siting an ADU?
Are there SDCs? Yes, there are, both at the special district level as well as at the county level. We have a transportation development tax, which I believe is rated at half that of the primary dwelling.
To permit an ADU is tens of thousands of dollars.
Correct.
Correct. Oh, and we did receive several letters of testimony that you should have all received as well. So,
yeah. Further questions, Mr. Rupp?
Well, one of the letters estimated 34,000 to 46,000 roughly in SDC. So that sounds in the ballpark.
Per unit.
Yeah, per unit.
I know that Cole Peterson primarily develops accessory dwelling units in the city of Portland, so I haven't done an apples-to-apples comparison of what those ADUs are, or what those SDCs.
I'm just asking ballpark. It sounds like...
I think the letter was from the home builders, actually.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't from Mr. Peterson or...
Right. I think that neglected to state that the TDT is at a lesser rate than the... for ADUs than the primary dwelling, but it is fairly substantial, the SDCs.
It's substantial relative, particularly to the percentage, proportion of the total cost of the ADU relative to what the SDC would be to the total cost of a single family, the house itself, right? Is that correct?
Potentially. I mean, accessory dwelling units are fairly expensive, but yeah, as a percentage of the whole, I imagine, without having the numbers in front of me, that that's true.
I'm sorry, Debra, I interrupted you.
Well, just the issue of waiving the SDCs for perhaps a period of time, was that something that wasn't in the purview of the staff to consider, or did you think about that?
So just some background. For probably at least a year and a half now, there's two elected bodies that I occasionally get involved in have been talking about this, and that's both the Washington County Coordinating Committee, which represents, and they have representation from the cities, and then it's chaired by Commissioner Rogers, and they're the main sort of body that oversees the transportation development tax, and then they make recommendations to the board on it. And then the board itself has been concerned about this issue to the point that they've certainly talked about it and asked for a lot of information on estimates of lost revenue if they waive it, or how would you replace the revenue? And so it's not an issue that isn't getting attention. But
Mr. Beck, it's not. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're making it sound like this is a consensus view of countywide, when in fact there's jurisdictions across the county who have just waived it altogether. Cities.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just saying
who are members of the WCCC,
right? But not the transportation development tax.
Okay.
So I'm just pointing out that the discussion is happening. That it's you could certainly make a recommendation to the board, sort of separate from this ordinance, on where you think they should go on this issue, to continue talking about it or aggressively talk about it and move towards it, or something, however you want to do that.
Yeah, aggressive is good, too.
However you want to do that, know that it's separate from the action you're taking today.
Well, why is it separate? I'm sorry.
Well, because you're acting on the community development code changes.
I see, because this SDC is not part of the community development code.
Correct. Okay. But as sort of policy guidance, you certainly have the discretion
I understand
to
you're
give
saying.
That to the board.
So thank you for clarifying that, because I was assuming that it was one and the same. So it's a policy issue outside of the community development code, which is our purview, but it's clearly related, because it's probably of the top three, the top, the number one obstacle to somebody considering it when the architect or planner comes in and shows a homeowner, and by the way, here's the SDC charge. And you reference that to some degree, and thank you for explaining why you didn't go into it deeper, because it's not really planning land use. It's a revenue issue. But I do think if we want to consider adding commentary to whatever we do, is what you're saying.
Right, and I think that's appropriate. And just know it's pretty complicated. There are special districts that even if the board wanted to, they don't have the purview, you know, THPRD and others. So it's complicated, but certainly if you want to provide some direction on where you think they should be going on it, that's appropriate.
Deborah, did you have further comment on that?
Go ahead.
Yes, go right ahead, Deborah. Yeah.
My other question was about setbacks, and the ordinance maintains the ADUs have to respect the existing setbacks set out for the underlying district, right? And one of the letter writers suggested removing the setback or maybe just having a 5-foot. I just wondered if you had a comment around that.
Setbacks certainly can potentially limit a homeowner's ability to build an ADU in some circumstances. I think staff felt that setbacks are such a larger, broader issue overall in the county that they deserved a deeper look, and that an ADU ordinance perhaps maybe isn't the vehicle for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My questions on ADUs are more from the engineering side. We design a whole subdivision and the storm sewer and a sanitary sewer and all the utilities and the parking and traffic all designed.
Does anyone consider that? I mean, they're not designed for twice as many households in there. And the parking, probably the older neighborhoods can handle it, but I don't know if the newer ones.
Do you mean the trunk in the street or the service lines?
Either one.
I mean,
is this just come down from the governor?
I think the argument,
this is what we're gonna do and you've got to follow it.
I think the argument, and it's been alluded to in, I think, the letters that we got, is that even if it's permitted, there's probably not, you know, not every house is going to have an ADU put in that can. And so the minimal amount of additional ADUs that, from a practical point of view, end up being built because of the SDCs and the cost and everything else, probably wouldn't put that much of a...
Right, it'd be like adding an addition to your house or something.
Exactly. You know, I mean,
it happens all the time.
You know, I mean, if you have an extra kid, you're going to be using the toilet.
Correct.
Whatever percent.
Right.
Much anyway. If you put in another toilet for grandma's ADU, it's not really adding that much.
That's your argument.
If it was a situation where we knew every house was going to put in an ADU.
Or two.
But,
In Portland, I think that they referenced this 2%.
They do, and I don't know the real number of ADUs, but 2% of eligible properties in Portland, if the numbers are correct from accessory dwelling, .org. If we had a similar increase in Washington County based on the eligible detached single family properties, the initial indication is that the max, if it were to meet 2%, would be like 1,200 countywide, all right, in the urbanized area.
I, Maybe someone can answer this. Maybe someone on the commission or staff can answer, but I assume an ADU would require a sewer tap permit? Is that correct?
If they can, I've spoken with Clean Water Services on this, and if they can connect into the existing lateral, then there's no additional SDC for that.
So it's sort of where it's located then is what determines whether a tap is needed.
Correct.
Where the existing one is located, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if gravity can't suffice for the ADU, then they would need to pay an additional SDC to have another line built, from my understanding.
So I think, Commissioner Erstedt, your concern is valid. I don't want to dismiss that. I think, and somebody also referenced that in their letters, was the taxing, or the will the capacity, particularly on streets that were, or neighborhoods that were developed, maybe, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and the capacity maybe isn't even up to current standards for what you would put in for a sewer today, and then you're going to allow, and they often have more land. Like I'm thinking of like areas of Aloha and some other areas that have, they might, it's a question. I assume if you're going to permit, I am hoping that maybe there's something in the system that says, yeah, but are you adding too much capacity? I don't know if Clean Water does that, no, yeah. So it's a valid concern. I think there's arguments on both sides of it. One is that maybe there is not going to be a lot of development to the level where it's going to be a regular concern, but I can imagine there'd be situations where it might be, right? Or 25 years ago, they're going to be listening to this tape and saying, why weren't they, so.
Yeah. So how about on rural land where you're on a septic? Does that mean you need got to build a septic bigger, or is it just hook it into the septic and go?
The current accessory dwelling unit standard only applies to the urbanized areas.
But some of the urbanized areas unincorporated.
Well, I thought you said it was any place you could have a house.
No, it would only be in urban unincorporated Washington.
But some of those do have septics. I mean, not everybody's on sewer. So what, relative to his question, assuming it's an unincorporated urbanized county and it's on septic, what happens when somebody wants to put in ADU? Do you know?
I'm going to back up to one question prior and just answer and say that land use applicants have to submit forms from service providers indicating that the level of service is adequate to serve what's proposed, including storm and sanitary sewer services. And we don't commonly have septic systems in the urban area. If somebody were to add an ADU, they may even be required to hook up to public services.
Well, there are neighborhoods in Bethany, I know, that do have septic, even though they're not being forced to be put on public services because they were built. But if someone were to bring an ADU in, it just may be that they either have to, I would think the service provider is going to say it's conditioned upon you providing another septic field or enough capacity of the current one, or you need to tie into a system. But it's not necessary. That's one way it's.
I guess my question is, a type one process would create that? You'd have to go get a service provider letter for a type one review?
I believe so. We can't condition type ones, though. We would have to rely on the service provider to require a hookup.
You're saying a service provider letter is not required under a type one?
For a type one, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, well, it's just a different level of review. I don't know that I've ever gotten an SPL on a type one review. So the only type one reviews I usually do are accessory to a type two that I've already done where I had to get one. And your comment about there not being a lot of septic systems in the urban area, I'm not sure how correct that is, just because if you go to Garden Home, there's a lot of underdeveloped properties, or Metzger. I live in the city of Tigard, and I'm on a septic system. So there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of the fringe. Yeah.
There is a provision in the code, and I don't remember if it's if you're within 300 feet or quite what the catch is, but when there is increased development on a property, there's normally a requirement to hook up to the public system unless there is some sort of physical feature precluding that or a significant distance precluding that.
So does a type... Is a type 1 defined as... Is a type 1 ADU defined as development? I'm just trying to make sure that all the connections are made, because if I did an addition to my house, I'm not sure that I'd be required to go hook up to sanitary.
To answer your question about development, yes, it is considered development. Even things like just grading are considered development in the code. So as far as adequacy of the existing system to handle what you're proposing to add to the site, we in planning wouldn't be judging whether it's adequate or not. We would be relying on the service provider to let us know that.
But is your question about the service provider even knowing about it if you're not if all you're required is a type 1?
Sounds, tell me if I'm misunderstanding. We submit a type 1 for an ADU on a piece of property. There's going to be a requirement to provide service provider letters. Is that what I'm understanding?
I'll take a whack at this too. There's also information through the plumbing permit at the building permit stage that gets at some of the things that you're talking about, that the service provider letter aren't like type 2s where they're big, long forms, but there are check with the other utilities before we issue the final building permit that makes sure that all those things can be provided.
Can I ask another question now?
You had like a three-story house and you putting an ADU in the basement, I guess. What makes it an ADU? Is it like a kitchen or something? Or, I mean, why couldn't you just rent out your basement? I don't get it. What makes it an ADU, and why wouldn't it just be someone living in your basement? Yeah, maybe that's it. It needs a cooking or...
Yeah, I mean, the Section 106 of the CDC defines what an accessory dwelling unit is, and... It's a complete kitchen, inclusive of a stove, makes an ADU. But the full definition is, places for sleeping area, bathroom, and an independent kitchen as well.
I think what you're saying, traditionally, we probably wouldn't call it an ADU, but now, technically, that would be an ADU. If you were to just fix up your basement as a living unit.
Yeah, there's lots of people that have.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. And a lot of those are probably more of the unpermitted ones. And but that would technically qualify by definition as an ADU, an interior in ADU. That's a question, I guess.
An unpermitted.
Or if it were permitted, it could still
have to have like a separate entrance and all that.
There's no requirement for a separate entrance. Generally, they do. They do have their own entrances. I think the definition says completely independent. So I guess depends on your definition of completely independent.
There may be fire and safety codes, though, that when you permit, you have to provide certain access points that are going to mandate either a door or certain windows and. Yeah, I do think you'd have to have doors. I do have a feeling that when you... No, but you're... Otherwise, if it didn't have a separate entrance, it would be an addition to your house with another kitchen, right? It'd be another bedroom, essentially, or another living space. And it would be in a gray area, but, The kitchen is what would trigger probably a violation then.
But, I mean, would it? I could go put a kitchen. I don't really care. Somebody can go. I personally am fine with my next door neighbor going and permitting, getting a plumbing permit and electrical permit and putting a kitchen in their basement and renting it out. But doesn't that show that somebody could go do an internal ADU without going through the process to demonstrate service provision and pay the SDCs? Why would somebody permit an internal ADU in the first place?
I think
I don't know that that matters.
I think the I think 95% of what we talk about and what is being constructed or renovated right now and will be under these state and local changes are going to be either attached but they're not going to be very few are going to be just simply the renovation of an interior space into a unit. Most of it, all of it's going to be standalone, separate, attached or detached buildings. I mean, that's how I understand the industry.
Separate from the primary.
Separate from the primary.
That's
correct.
What I had pictured.
But
that's
this,
what I've seen in like downtown Portland, you see the ADUs, and they're usually where there's already a parking problem, and now there's like,
yeah,
you know, adding to it.
Yeah, but but that's not our issue, right? I mean, the state's saying that's that's what the allowance.
The state's kind of saying we have to do this, right? Is that right?
Certain elements of it, yeah.
Certain elements of it, yeah.
I mean, there's whenever you have these, and this is a big change, as we've had multiple significant changes relative to housing equity and creating more housing supply. We're changing, you know, all these assumptions of what we assume for single-family housing rules and regulations. All these changes are going to result in, geez, we didn't think about that situation, whatever that may be. And my hunch is there's going to be have to be some rulemaking or tinkering as all these changes are implemented, because a lot of them are happening faster than we know, faster than our ability to think through all the implications. I mean, that's
but has Portland had ADUs long enough to work through some of the issues?
They've had more of them, I should say. I don't know if it's long enough, but they've had, once they removed the SDC, there was a, there was a large increase, even though the staff report says it was minimal. I mean, percentage-wise, it was a large increase. It was threefold. Mm-hmm. So they do have experience with it. And I invited one of the Portland ADU people to come here tonight to help to address some questions like that. So I don't know what tinkering around the edges they've done already.
Yeah. On the topic of SDCs, it's a very complex, and I'm on the budget committee with THPRD, and it's something that's, being struggled with because governments don't want to give up the money that they need. If you build a detached or an attached apartment, basically, and rent it out to somebody, that's going to be another person that's using services. So I can see that point. But if they're too expensive, then people may not build them. And so if government's worried that they're losing their SDCs, well, they're not getting the SDCs if the units aren't being built. So it's
a balancing act.
Yeah. But the topic of if you have an existing basement that's pretty much finished, and I don't know how, I mean, often they have some type of sink in there, but maybe not to the capacity of a kitchen sink. But if, and I don't know how much electrical work you need to do to put a kitchen and a stove and a sink, but it would seem to me that if you're just sticking a stove and a sink in an existing basement that otherwise is kind of a separate unit, if you're having to pay $30,000 or $40,000 in SDCs just for that legal permission to do that, that seems a bit steep. But again,
I think we're talking about the stuff that falls way outside the norm.
Yeah,
I think in ordinary jurisdictional situations, if you take a portion of your house, to say this is going to be sort of a separate unit, and you put in a kitchen and a bedroom, and it has sort of its own entrance, and you haven't that's an illegal, that you're creating a duplex. And that's, and if it's not allowed by zoning, it's illegal. And that does exist. There's a lot of that use. It's not, they're not legal nonconforming. They're many times illegal. But that, I think, isn't, I think this is sort of the 5% or even less than that part of what we're talking about when it comes to ADUs. That's at least my perspective.
Chair, or Vice Chair and Commissioners, I do want to add that I think we're kind of at the tip of the iceberg here, not in a fatalistic, bad sort of way, but you do point out a lot of kind of nuances and details that my understanding, the City of Portland has a lot of staff just devoted to this issue, and it relates also to the Airbnb issue that you'll likely hear next year, and that fine line between short-term rentals and ADUs, and so we're just getting into this. So we're developing more and more expertise, but frankly, we don't have a ton of these, so we don't devote the staff to it that we probably will in the future. So I think there's a learning curve for all of us on this. So.
And there's unintended consequences. One of them is going to be the Airbnb effect. In some jurisdictions, who said we're trying to create more supply of housing, but if a meaningful portion is going toward short-term rentals like Airbnb, you know, some jurisdictions have said we're going to limit. We're going to prohibit it, that because we did it to on a public policy basis to increase the supply and affect affordability. Further questions for staff? I mean, it's an interesting subject, at least to me, but I can see by the amount of people in our audience, maybe it's only us, except are you here to speak tonight? No.
I could draft them.
Yeah.
Look, why don't we go into our public testimony?
Well, I just want to make sure that if there were any other questions on this, even though we sort of went down in the weeds on a couple of issues on this.
One more.
No, go right ahead. This is what
it's. I guess after all this discussion, I feel, is it a trick or difficult to keep this a type one type of thing?
Is it a what? I'm sorry.
Is developing an ADU complicated enough that it's doesn't really fit type one, which is where we're trying to go here?
No, it's not. In the past ordinance, we had already turned ADU applications into type 1 reviews for the most part. There were just some districts where we hadn't done so yet.
So you have experience with it? I mean, it's been...
Yes.
Right, okay. Thanks.
Well, Mr. Beck, did you have a comment? If there are no further comments or questions, then let's proceed to open the public hearing. On proposed land use ordinance 859, amending the CDC to implement legislative changes related to housing, and in this regard, it is related to ADUs. So public hearing is open. Is there anybody signed up or present who'd like to speak on this as a member of the public? You sure? Okay.
Please.
Yes. If you could at least introduce yourself and what brought you out here on this rainy evening to. Yes, please. You have to introduce yourself by name and address, please.
My name is Brent Rogers, 18255 Southwest Kinneman Road, Aloha. And so I just came out because my property is subject to this, and I assume this is with the House bill.
Several new, House bills.
The new House bill. Okay. So
Incentives.
I just came to listen to hear I've got a property that has one residence on it. It's 0.8 acres, zoned R9, and it's just one house right now. And so it's zoned for 7 houses can go on it. And from what I understand from the county office for this is that when you guys were talking about the basement, you know, being converted, would it not be that if it was actually an official duplex, if you turned it into a duplex, that you would pay that tax? Is that not what it would be?
If the zone allows it, I'll let staff answer that. I'm sorry.
To ask further clarification from your question, are you asking that the system, if the system development charges would be higher for a duplex as opposed to an accessory dwelling unit?
Yeah. So currently, right now, I guess the way this is reading is that if you have a property and you have enough of the setback, you wanted to turn the upper floor into a residence and the lower floor is the residence, that why would you pay, you know, why would you do it through the tax? If I would think the benefit would be that you would have a duplex instead of a single family residence.
There may be certain situations where an entire floor is greater than the 800 square foot maximum.
Okay.
Where depending on your intended use of that additional unit, it may be more beneficial to go with the accessory dwelling unit rather than the duplex. I guess it would depend on what the end goal is.
The reason why I came out is I have a property that is large, is being unused, and it's on a major road on Kinnaman. And currently right now to develop it into the 7 lots, it just doesn't pencil out to do it. And so when this house bill passed that single-family residents or single-family parcels could be made into multi, that's why I'm out. This having the housing shortage and that,
and
that's why I'm out.
Just I think Aloha and some other areas are prime areas because they have single-family homes on larger lots.
Right.
And will be suitable for ADU development.
So that's why I'm out. It's just
and so one could take a property such as yours, irrespective of the 9 units, and just say, I want to put 2 ADUs on it, one attached, one detached, and rent out both of them. That would be allowable under this new code change, correct, staff?
Correct.
Right.
There's no restriction on having to be owner-occupied or...
Really what I was trying to find out was, currently right now I have a property that is zoned for 7 properties and it doesn't pencil out. So with the House bill passing, if it was 7 triplexes, that's what I'm just trying to learn, is that if it was 7 triplexes with the ADU, you know, build it 2 attached and 1 detached, obviously paying all the taxes on it so that the infrastructure is not it. It goes from 7, it goes to 21.
I think we're getting into pre-application meeting type stuff.
Yeah, no. So that's why I'm just here to listen to that. So
I don't think we know. So House Bill 2001 hasn't been implemented at the local level yet, and so we don't know.
Right.
We don't know what it's going to look like.
So in this right here is not even a part of that.
It's part.
No, it is.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. There are several Senate and House bills, as they adopted, overlay and affect ADUs and how they need to be regulated now at the local level.
But not the duplexes, triplexes,
fourplexes.
Correct. Right.
Yeah.
We don't know what that's going to look like.
Right.
It's the single family zoning.
All right. Thank you for your time.
And the law is effective January 1, is that correct? Is that what I read? So, nevertheless. And is there anyone, any other member of the public present or signed up? Not seeing any, I will officially close the public hearing on Ordinance 859.
I recommend approval of Ordinance 859 to the Board of Commissioners.
A second.
Discussion. I hate it. The chair really is supposed to. The chair has the right to.
The chair has the right, so go ahead and discuss whatever. Feel free to discuss whatever you like.
You know, I'm trying to be impartial, but this is an issue that's close to, you know, my work and my interest. And the, I guess I want to comment before we take action, and that is, it's all, you know, there's issues that come together once in a while. There are public policy issues, and it's like, where there's agreement. And it's not often, but this seems to be one like where actually community activists who want affordable housing and the Home Builders Association are completely lined up. I think they submitted a wonderful letter, and were members of elected officials are on it, and so there's a relative consensus on this issue. And these housing equity issues, because of the housing affordability problem to the degree of even crisis we face. And so, you know, it says in this ordinance, in the staff report, the headline of it really is, you know, the goal is reducing barriers to the development of ADUs in urban unincorporated areas of the county. There's four primary obstacles. It's the owner occupancy, solved, right, with this. Off-street, that's a big one. Parking requirement, that's solved, more or less, or mitigated. The open space requirement, because how do you fit it in if you don't have enough space? Or, you know, if there's too much of it, and that's addressed. And I think there was accolades on all of that, on the letters that were submitted. But it's the SDC one, which is also probably one of the most, one of those large obstacles that isn't addressed. That other jurisdictions, in spite of what staff has mentioned and what we know about how this is, how SDCs aren't directly related to land use, the CDC, but it is intimately tied to it because it's one of the largest obstacles. Some jurisdictions have waived it. Some have put in interim waivers to incentivize the development of the ADUs. Some have said our SDCs aren't designed really for ADU development, so it's getting a flat fee that should be more proportional in some aspect versus simply one more unit means 30,000. Well, maybe it shouldn't be that. It should be, and then there's all the layers of the fees. So I would like to request that the motion be amended to include a recommendation, not an engrossment, but a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners to consider revising the SDC as it applies to ADUs to, in fact, do what the ordinance's goal intent is, which is to reduce the barriers. And it's a major barrier. So I guess I would like a second to that amendment.
Since I proposed the motion, I don't mind having that added.
Okay. Is there any objection to amending the motion to include asking the Board of Commissioners to consider revising the SDC as it applies to ADUs to remove the barrier that it might pose?
I, with all due respect, I guess I won't say I fully object, but I can't support it just because I have a hard time believing that an ADU is anything different than a one-bedroom apartment or a studio apartment that is going to get hit with the same SDCs. And I've spent many, many, many years going to meetings and hearing policymakers talk about the fact that we need to jack up this SDC and jack up that SDC and we don't have enough money. And it's made a lot of other housing unaffordable. And although I think we need to do something to make housing more affordable, I don't know that the right solution is to just wave a wand and say, this is what doesn't have to pay anything. Because ultimately the end result is they're gonna have an impact on the system and everybody else is going to have to pay for the to offset it. So that's where I have right. That's where I can.
Maybe we should have two motions.
No, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to revoke my recommendation.
Okay.
Because I hear what Commissioner Wellner is saying.
Yeah.
And it's starting to address what is the larger issue that Mr. Back was saying as well, which is it opens up a whole can of worms. And since it's not related to the CDC per se, this is a pet interest of mine, I'll submit a letter to the commissioners independently. That said, it should be noted though that both of the practitioner part input that we received was that this was one of the major obstacles.
And I agree with that.
And I called one of them, not one of these, but another one of the activists in ADUs in the metro area. Actually, he's a national expert, Eli Spevic. And he, I asked him about this. He says, the question of what Commissioner Mulner says is valid. That means essentially we're subsidizing ADUs. He says, but maybe that's not a bad public policy. And maybe that's why incentivizing it maybe over a short period might be worthwhile. But I think it confuses and it's maybe out of we're out of our water here. And so I'll address that separately. There's been a motion to adopt Ordinance 859, and I believe it was seconded by Commissioner, Deborah, I'm sorry, Commissioner Lockwood, my mind's. Yes.
I need to interject a point of order here.
Sure.
So it's possible that we might have lost.
Commissioner Enloe.
Yes. So there's a way to check for that. So do you mind if we check right now before we take the vote? Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, I thought it clicked off. Sorry. We still have five, but we would just need for the record note that she's no longer present if she has dropped off.
We're just trying to confirm if that's the case, and if she had called in and wanted to participate.
Oh, absolutely. No, please take your time if you need to do that. We need to encourage her involvement as a young mother.
Hello.
It looked like we dropped the call. This is Chuck from the county. So we're about to take a vote.
Okay.
Commissioner Enloe, we have a motion. We had a public hearing. We had some public comment, but we also had a longer discussion among ourselves.
I've only been off the call for less than a minute. So
okay.
I heard
so
all that.
So the motion is to adopt it, and it was seconded. And we were moving toward closing discussion and taking a vote. So are you comfortable with that?
Yes, I am. Yeah, okay. I have been on for basically all of that. I just got dropped not too long ago. So,
well, fortunately, County Council made a point that you might have been dropped and wanted to get you back on the record. So all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any objections? Without any objections, and we'll consider it unanimously adopt or approved for recommendation to the Board of Commissioners. Thank you. And then the next order of business is our minutes, I believe. Which I'm sorry, I need to find. These are the minutes from July 10th, 2019. Are there any changes or revisions to those minutes on those dates? Is there any objection to adopting the minutes as drafted? Not hearing any, we'll consider them adopted unanimously. And is there... if there is no objection, I would call the meeting to close. Is there any objection to adjourning the meeting? Without there being any objection, the meeting is closed or adjourned at 7:50 p.m. Thank you, and thank you for staff, as always, coming here in the evening after work. So.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.